some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. Tonight we've got an awesome, we've got actually got two guests, but our first guest tonight is going to be Mr. Walter Newkirk. He is coming on to talk about one of his books. He's actually got a couple that are out, but we're going to be talking about his book, Memorabilia, a private scrapbook about Edie Beale of Grey Gardens, first cousin to the First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. We're going to have Walter on in just a minute. But like we do every night, I kind of give you a recap of what's happened earlier in the week and a fast forward to what's happening the rest of the week so you can go back and listen to any shows that you've missed. On Monday, we had Dr. Annie Ulrich. She always comes on the first Monday of the month, whenever we possibly can make that happen. Sometimes we have holidays and things like that that impact it. But this Monday, Dr. Annie was on. She gives us the energy update for the month of November. Last night, we had romance novelist Ara Gregorian on with his book, Game of Love. Tonight, we've got Walter. Tomorrow, we have actor, producer, director Leon Acord with Old Dogs, New Tricks. They're entering their fourth season of a very popular LGBT web series. It's the final season, so we're going to find out what that's entailing for Mr. Leon Acord. And then on Friday night, we've got the jazz band Project Grand Slam out of New York City joining us live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, of course, hour number one. It's always kind of like the behind the scenes with the artist, like on VH1, you know, when VH1 played music and actually talked about artists and it wasn't a reality show channel. Well, that's what we're going to do on Friday night with Project Grand Slam. They've got a great new jazz album that's out, and we're going to be playing music from that. Later tonight, we're going to have indie filmmaker Jill Salvino out of New York City as well. We've got like a New York state of mind going on, but we're going to have Jill on talking about her new indie film called Between the Shades, and it will be lots of fun. But that's going to be the last 10 or 15 minutes of the show. So without further ado, our superstar of the night is Mr. Walter Newkirk. Walter, welcome to Rated G Radio. How are you?
I'm great, Garrett. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm so excited that you're here. We've had this kind of on the books for probably about like 5 or 6 weeks now, and I've been excited to read your book. And I always tell authors, you know, when we set the appointment, make sure to get me a copy of your book. You were lightning fast on it, but I never read the book until like the day of the show or the night before the show, so it's actually like fresh in my head. So today I had a chance to go through and read the entire book, Memorabilia, and I think I'm the only gay person in America who doesn't know, you know, Grey Gardens or the story of any of this, and I found this completely fascinating today. So this is it was a great kind of a history lesson, educational lesson, but I learned some great things about you along the way. So thank you for writing the book and being here tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. But, you know, you can actually watch the documentary. It's online. It's on YouTube. And the HBO movie is on YouTube, and the musical is on YouTube.
Well, so, I have three things I can do after the show tonight, so I may just do all three of those. But the fact that you took your relationship with Edie and put this in a book and showcased this for the world, I think just really speaks volumes about interesting relationships that you have with people that just kind of, I don't want to say stumble into your life, but they just kind of come into your life, and all of a sudden, you know, you have these bonds with them that last, you know, for decades, and that's what you've done here.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate. As you know, I first became acquainted with the whole reality documentary thing through a TV series called An American Family, which was the first reality, but it's really like more or less an Andy Warhol documentary film about a family in Santa Barbara, California, that during the filming, the mother, Pat Loud, asked her husband for a divorce during a time when people didn't even talk about divorce, and she did that on camera. She kind of regrets it now, but she did it. And her eldest son, Lance, was gay and now recognized as the first openly gay person on TV in the history of TV. And I first saw, I interviewed Pat Loud about her book when she moved to New York, and I then first saw Grey Gardens with her. And when I saw Grey Gardens, I just was so kind of, you know, it was 1976, and I had never seen anything like that. And I called Edie, and I figured, you know, if Pat Loud was so kind and generous to do an interview with me, it took several phone calls, but Edie invited me out to the house, and I interviewed her.
Well, you make it sound so easy that, oh, yeah, well, she just invited me out for a cup of tea or something like that. But there is a whole story behind, you know, getting out there that I took the journey with you here, Walter. I just got in the car with you and your buddies, and, you know, as you kind of described the setting going out there, I can see exactly what you guys were doing, and I can just imagine what was going
through
your head.
Well, I'm
going
to send you the CD. The CD came first. I turned on the tape recorder while we were in the car, and I just let it run. So it's not a standard Q&A interview. It's like audio verite. It's like you're a fly on the wall. I put on the tape recorder when we were in the car looking for the house, and then the whole thing is just a whole day with Edie. It's pretty much a monologue, and she's quite different. A lot of people, you know, said she was crazy and eccentric and like that, but there were two films that were made. There was first Grey Gardens in 1976, and many years later, I believe in the late 90s, or actually in the early 2000s, Albert Maysles, who passed away this year. And this year is the 40th anniversary of Grey Gardens' debut at the New York Film Festival. He made another film called The Beals of Grey Gardens, and it shows another side of Edie that's a lot more calm. And they really, the Beals didn't really understand the concept of a documentary film. The original film that was going to be made was going to be about Jacqueline Kennedy and her sister Lee Radziwill. And Big Edie, the mother of Little Edie, was going to narrate the film. And then the film project with Jackie and Lee fell through, and the Maysles decided to do the film about the Beals, about the mother-daughter relationship and losing the money and stuff like that. And Jackie is just kind of mentioned in passing. But Jacqueline Kennedy has become a pop culture icon like Elvis Presley and the woman that had an affair with Edie's cousin-in-law, John F. Kennedy. And the Grey Gardens thing, you know, I thought it was going to be over when the HBO movie aired, but the musical continues. This summer, it was presented in Sag Harbor, which is close to East Hampton at the Bay Street Theater, with Betty Buckley, the Tony winner.
Holy cow.
For Cats, and also from Eight is Enough, starring as Big Edie. So Grey Gardens is really becoming part of our cultural landscape. It's here for a long time. It's never going away.
Walter, can you do me a favor? Because, again, until I read your book today, really no clue about any of this. I've heard of Grey Gardens, didn't know what it meant, who it involved, any of that. I kind of had an inkling it had something to do with Jackie, Bouvier. But who are these people? And
okay.
Why do we have such
a fascinating deal? Known as Edith Ewing Bouvier, was the sister of Black Jack Bouvier, Jackie Kennedy Onassis's father. She grew up actually not far from me. I live in Chatham, New Jersey, which is about 30 miles outside of New York City, in Nutley, New Jersey, and the house is still there. And she married an older man, Phelan Beale, and Big Edie wanted to be a singer. And that was unheard of for a society woman. And she used to put on elaborate outfits and sing arias. And her husband was just, they were not well suited. They divorced, and little Edie wanted to be a model and an actress. And her father wanted her married off to, a respectable man. And what happened was Mr. Beale married another woman and left the Beales with no money. And Mrs. Beale, Edie was living in New York. She was staying at the Barbizon Hotel, and she summoned Edie to come home because she was lonely and wanted her daughter. And Edie went back to Grey Gardens, and the house deteriorated to a point where there was 5 feet worth of cat cans and all kinds of garbage, and they were going to be evicted. And a freelance photographer came and took pictures, and it was in all the tabloids that, you know, Jackie O's cousin and aunt were living in poverty. And Jacqueline Onassis went out and cleaned up the house because Big Edie wanted to die there. She did not want to leave her house. And so the house was cleaned up, and they stayed there. And then the Maysles came and made the documentary, and the rest is history.
So the house was cleaned up after, or the documentary was made after the house was cleaned up?
Yeah, but it kind of went back. I mean, I kind of compare very loosely the Beals to the Hoarders TV series.
Sure.
It got back to the point. I mean, when we went to the house, and, you know, I wrote about this in the book, I took some pastries and But when you walked into the house, it smelled like, you know, cat feces and urine. I mean, it almost took your breath away. It was like being in a barn. And it just, you know, that's how they lived. A year after I interviewed Edie and her mother for my college newspaper, the Rutgers University Daily Targum, her mother died. And Big Edie had always told Little Edie to sell the house. And she sold it to Sally Quinn and the late Ben Bradley, her husband, who was the editor of the Washington Post. And the house was recently featured, and again, you can find this on YouTube, on CBS Sunday Morning in July. They did an update on it. Little Edie sold the house to Sally Quinn with the stipulation that the house would not be torn down, and Sally Quinn did not tear it down. She put in tennis courts and a pool, and the house is worth, I believe, is now $250 million.
Holy cow!
Yeah, I'm telling you, there's a segment on YouTube that says Parting the Curtains at Gray Gardens, and it was just aired this past July on CBS Sunday Morning. And Ben Bradley and Sally Quinn still own the house. Well, he died a few months ago, and they rented out in the summer. I believe someone rented it for an incredible amount of money. And, you know, I was only to the house two times. Once when I interviewed Edie in 1976, and 2 years later when she was going to sell it. But I haven't been in it since it's been refurbished, but it's just absolutely a show place. It's spectacular.
Okay, so I've got to, and I know you haven't been there for, you know, 40 years, something crazy like
no,
that.
No, I actually was there. There's a woman named Lois Wright who was a friend of the Beale. She's another eccentric person. She reads palms, and she lived at Gray Gardens for a year after her mother died. In fact, she has a book called My Life at Gray Gardens, 13 Years and Beyond, and I'm actually in the book. It's a diary of her life there. And I went out to do her, after I wrote my memoir a year ago, which is called The Secret Life of Walter Newkirk, I went out to promote that book and talk about Gray Gardens with Lois, and I actually drove up to the house and says, no, I don't care. I have my books with me. So I took some pictures outside of it, but every time I go there, there's nobody answering the door. But one of these days, I'll be back in the house. I would like to see it, considering I was in it twice when it was very run down.
So this kind of gets us off topic, but one of the things that in my day job-ish, I get to go out to customers' homes and, you know, walk into a variety of different situations. And there have been times where I've walked into places and said, this is like a health hazard because it's either, you know, like a hoarder's type of a situation or the ammonia from whatever animals they have, you know, from peeing on the carpets or peeing on the hardwood floors and having it just soak in and stay there. You know, it almost makes your eyes water. What was it like for you guys, you know, going in there? Because you tell the story afterwards that, you know, you were...
Well, there's a guy, I took two other guys with me because I was kind of, you know, everybody knows Gray Gardens now all these years later, and I had a little bit of trepidation about going, and I wanted to take a photographer. So I took a guy by the name of Jeff Holtzman, who was a great photographer and has almost a photojournalistic look at our day there. We were there for about 2 hours, and he had not seen the film. So I tried to tell him about it on the way in the car, and Jeff now owns a very big toy company. He made a marionette of Carol Channing, and does, you know, a lot of, it's a multimillion-dollar company, I believe. And he tells a story that when he went back to his apartment, he took a shower for about 2 hours and threw away his clothes. That's how freaked out he was by the smell. And when we got in the car to leave, it was April, but it was still a little bit on the chilly side. I went to put on the heat, and we all simultaneously threw open the car doors and jumped out because the smell from the cat urine and feces and everything else was so pungent we couldn't breathe. So it was quite the smell in there. It was quite devastating.
So how do those two ladies, I guess, you know, you if you live in it, you don't really see it or smell it as much as, you know, others that are
like
fresh off the
barn.
Farm.
If you've ever been into a barn, once you're in
there
for a while, you get used to the smell. Edie had two brothers, Bouvier Beale and Phelan Beale, and they both paid the taxes on the house, but they had their own families, and they really wanted both of them to move out, and that is covered in the HBO movie. A lot of people, you know, talk down the brothers that they didn't do enough, but that house needed so much work. They really wanted them to move to a smaller place, but the Big Edie refused to leave. She wanted to die there, and she did die there.
What a crazy legacy that was, you know, and for people that had such amazing, you know, show business types of aspirations. I think what was fascinating to me is that, you know, you recount in your book that when they went out to film Grey Gardens, that, you know, the relationship that you ended up having with Edie for, you know, years and years and years was completely not like what was showcased in the movie. And what was the reasoning for that?
She was not like that. She really wasn't. When you see the documentary, they argue and they bicker, and she does a dance with a flag that's very popular that people put up for the 4th of July and Memorial Day. But, you know, she came out to – I worked at the Newark Museum, which is actually the finest museum in the state of New Jersey. It was built in 1909. And she took up the director, Samuel Miller, was ironically, his wife, Rosetta, was a good friend of Pat Loud's, and I didn't even know that when I got the job. They used to bust their friends out from New York. So Edie came out to the museum, and, you know, she did not stand out because the documentary had only been in the theater, the Paris Theater, and a couple places in the country for a few weeks, and was fairly dormant until the Grey Gardens, the documentary, was released on VHS and DVD in the late 90s. And that's when I had lost contact with Edie. I stayed in touch with her from 1976 to 1985. And I think she was interested in me. The guys there said she flirted with me, but she was a big flirt. She, you know, she never wanted to get married. But when she lived in New York, I took her to cocktail parties and discos and luncheons and stuff like that. And then she moved to Florida, and I lost touch with her. But when the movie came out on VHS and DVD, I wrote to Albert Maysles and said, you know, I was a pretty good friend of Edie's. She would write to me because I couldn't afford the phone calls. She was a big talker. I would always call to see how she was doing. And so she wrote me all these letters. And recently, a man by the name of David W. Streets, who is a Beverly Hills art appraiser, told me to contact Julian's Auction House, and they're in L.A. I had contacted Christie's and Sotheby about these letters that Edie had written to me. At the end of our conversation, she would always say to me, I'll write you a letter. And I saved the letters, and she wrote about Jackie and Britney Spears and Lee Radziwill. And so we did the first auction. I don't look at the letters. I love them, and I've had Xeroxes of them and scans. And we auctioned 10 of the letters in June, and they went for $4,000.
Holy
cow. So I have about 60 more letters to go, and we're doing another auction on December 16th and 17th, and it'll be another 10 letters.
So who did she tell you not to marry?
She told me not to marry Cher because she had all those children. She knew I loved Cher. And she also told me not to marry Pat Loud because she had a lot of children. And she wrote me these loving notes that are in my second book. I had only intended to do the first book. What happened was Edie died in 2002. And I had Albert Maysles told me that a musical was coming forward. So I met with Scott Frankel, who wrote the music, and Michael Corey, the lyricist. They came out to my apartment. I was then living in Madison, New Jersey. And they said to me, you should do a book. And I said, well, do you want to do it with me? And they said, we have a musical to write. And, you know, I said in my book, to me, they were not Rodgers and Hammerstein. I didn't expect anything. But lo and behold, the musical was on Broadway with Christine Ebersole. It got incredible reviews. The lyrics, Michael Corey lifted dialogue from the documentary and built it into songs in the musical. It was just amazing. And I think it's the only documentary that's ever been made into a musical. And so I went to see it, and I couldn't believe it. It was so great. And I was not intending to do it. I said, you know what? I did my book. First, I did the CD. People would listen to the CD. It was a tape-recorded interview with Edie. I saved all these years. And I re-edited it into a 72-minute CD. I put an intro. I put a closing on it. And I had a place called PS Classics that wanted to produce it, and they had problems. And so, you know what? I did it myself. I found people to help me with the graphics. I found people to help me transfer it, and I've sold about 10,000 copies of it. It's great. I'm going to send you a copy of it. It's 72 minutes of Edie talking about the film and the raids on the house and stuff like that. And after that, I did the memorabilia book, which it still sells. I still get royalty checks on it. And after that, I had been in touch with one of my professors from Rutgers, and he loved the musical. And I said, I'm really curious as to what you thought about the book. It's not Wuthering Heights, and that's what he teaches. And he said he liked it, but he wanted more from her. And the only thing I really felt that I had, without trying to recreate more dialogue and things she said to me, were the letters she sent to me. interesting thing that a lot of people don't know about publishing letters. The letters belong to me. I can burn them. I can rip them up. I can sell them. But the words in the letters don't belong to me. They belong to Edie Beal. And in order to publish the letters and put them in a book, you need that person's permission. And if you don't have their permission, it goes over to the estate. And Eva Beal, who's married to Bouvier Beal Jr., who's Edie's nephew, and the executive of the estate said, look, we know she was a great friend of yours. So I did the second book, which is Letters of Little Edie Beal, and that's the two books on Grey Gardens. And then a year ago, I did my memoir, which kind of covers more Grey Gardens. And I was a publicist in the fine and performing arts, and I did projects with Lena Horne and Cheryl Lee Ralph, who's known for Dreamgirls, and Moesha, and... I'm very pleased and proud of all three of the books.
I want to have you back next year, because then we're going to talk about The Secret Life of Walter Newkirk, because that's another book that I want to read. But while we go through this, can you talk a little bit more about the Broadway experience?
Broadway show was preceded, of course, by an off-Broadway show, Playwrights Horizons, that got incredible reviews. Christine Ebersole, who won a Tony for 42nd Street, starred as Edie Beal. She played two roles. The first act goes into a backstory of the glory days when they had a lot of money, and it presupposes that Edie was engaged to Joseph Kennedy Jr. She was not, but they made that part of the first act. Back in the 40s. And Big Edie, the young Big Edie was played by Christine Ebersole. In the second act, she played Little Edie in the 70s. So it was like a dual role. She was just magnificent. And Mary Louise Wilson played old Big Edie in the second act. And so the show moved to Broadway, and it was very exciting. Michael Corey is a very, very nice man. He took me to the opening nights, and they had a lovely party at the Boathouse in Central Park, and Rosie O'Donnell was there, and Lee Radziwill, and like that. And the show was nominated for about 10 Tony Awards, and Christine Ebersole won Best Actress in a Musical, and Mary Louise Wilson won Best Supporting Actress. And it was also nominated for Best Musical, but it lost to Spring Awakening. And after that, concurrently, a man by the name of Michael Soucy grew up in Quogue and was fascinated with the story of the Beals, and he was going to make a story about the backstory, but not about the Joseph Kennedy thing, and he did exhaustive research. And the HBO movie Grey Gardens was cast with Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange, and it won Best TV Movie. Jessica Lange won Best Actress in a TV Movie, and Drew Barrymore won the Golden Globe Award for Best Actress in a TV Movie. And it goes on and on and on, because it's available on demand. It's on YouTube. And I have a whole philosophy that people will find Grey Gardens because of Jessica Lange being an American Horror Story. People love that show. And if they go back and they look at the films of Jessica Lange, they're going to find Grey Gardens. And then if they like Grey Gardens, they're going to find the documentary. So Grey Gardens is here to stay.
So I have to go back and see this now, Walter. But going back to your book, Memorabilia, I love the pictures that you included in here, because they just talk when you see the pictures that you have in here. I like your captions. Tell us why you picked the pictures that you included in this fantastic book that you've written.
I think the pictures, like I said, Jeff Holtzman took photos that were kind of like a photojournalist. So I strategically placed the photos to go along with the text. And I say the book is facts, artifacts, photos, and art. So I also put in transcriptions of the letters. I mean, it's a true scrapbook. I put in, her entry in my address book, and it's a, it's an amalgam. It's a private scrapbook. It's my scrapbook of memories of Edie Beal.
You know, the picture that I like best out of all of the pictures that are in the book is on page 29, and there's a picture of Lois Wright's paintbrushes that are on the stove, and there's also a little painting that's on the stove, and I look at that stove going, I'm not sure if that stove has been used in the last century, and I just found that so telling.
Lois moved into the house. Again, her book is called My Life at Grey Gardens, 13 Years and Beyond. Her mother had died, and Lois kind of is She's still alive. She lives in East Hampton. I'm going to do a book about her, but my mother died 6 months ago, and it just got sidetracked. I did a lot of interviews with Lois and a lot of people that knew her. She knew the Beals for years. Her father, her uncle, was named John Erdman, and her brother, this is very fascinating, is named William Wright, and he did the only audio interview, which is a radio interview, with Jackson Pollock that exists, and it's now in the Museum of Modern Art.
Wow. You know everybody.
And she lived at Gregg Gardens. In fact, she answers the door. I say, you can hear it on the CD, which I'm going to send to you. And I say, oh, here she comes. And it was Lois. And said, well, Edie's not ready. She'll be. And Lois was not around for most of the interview, but she lived there for a year. And she was there when Big Edie died. And she's a quite eccentric character herself. She still paints. She's a painter. And she lived downstairs and had an art studio in the kitchen.
Which is, you know, exactly where I'd want an art studio, is in the kitchen. Probably had good light. So,
right.
One of the things that I thought was interesting is the fact that, you know, on the surface, if I were to say that I knew anything, the only thing that I would admit to knowing is that I thought that the two ladies were going to be really, really crazy. And then reading your book, you're going, you know, they were just as normal as could be. Edie was great, you know, very normal, not crazy. And at the end of the day, she just really loved being an artist, or she loved, you know, the art type of world, people and scenarios. And I was fascinated by that because, you know, artists can be a little eccentric sometimes.
Well, she wanted to be a model and an actress, and there are photos of her. Eva Beale did a book called Edith Bouvier Beale, A Life in Pictures, and it's really interesting because there was an auction. When I was writing the book, there was an auction out here in New Jersey. Jacqueline Kennedy had a horse farm or something in Peapack, which is not far from where I live, which is why I thought they had the auction here. And when I went to the auction, there I was telling people about Gregg Gardens. You know, they had a preview before the auction of artifacts that Jacqueline Kennedy gave to her assistants, Provencia, Paredes, and Mary Stewart, Mary Gallagher. And a woman walked up to me and said, I couldn't help overhearing you talk about Gregg Gardens. My husband's Ron Galella. Well, Ron Galella was the famous paparazzo that Jacqueline Kennedy took to court for harassing her. And the notoriety of that case back in the 70s was landmark. And in fact, HBO made a film about him called Smash His Camera. And Ron Galella has an archive of millions and millions of photos of not only Jacqueline Kennedy, but Madonna and Elizabeth Taylor. And I highly recommend that documentary. It's called Smash His Camera. Ron and Betty became very good friends of mine. And the picture that he took, he actually took a picture of Edie, is on the back cover of Memorabilia, and it's also on the cover of my CD.
I love that. So
that was kind of a weird coincidence, along with the whole thing with when Edie moved to New York. She sold the house in 1978 to Sally Quinn, and she wanted to move to New York but couldn't find a place, so she lived in Southampton for a year, and then she moved to New York. Well, when she moved to New York, Pat Loud was in New York, who I'd seen Gregg Gardens with, and I introduced them, and they kind of became friends, and Pat Loud has an essay in the book about meeting Edie Beale.
So why...
I want to point out, too, that An American Family was made into a documentary of sorts about the making of An American Family called Cinema Verite, with Diane Lane as Pat Loud, Tim Robbins as her husband, and James Gandolfini, best known for The Sopranos, as the producer Craig Gilbert. And Yale University opened an archive of An American Family with Pat Loud's, you know, writings and the family albums and things like that, and also Lance Loud, who passed away in 2001.
So,
or 2002. 2001, I think.
Walter, can you give me a little history lesson on the family, and where did their money go?
Well, they didn't. The money was with the husband. Back in the day,
Okay.
To take care of them. And the money, the Bouvier money, was gone. Jacqueline Kennedy didn't have any money either, and neither did Lee Radziwill. They married money. Jacqueline Kennedy married into the Kennedy family, and Lee Radziwill became a princess. The Bouvier money was gone. Jack Bouvier, who was Jackie's father, was an alcoholic, and he couldn't even walk her down the aisle at the wedding. Her mother, Janet Bouvier, married Auchincloss, who had lots of money. So the money just went. And Phelan Beale married another woman, and he didn't pay any alimony to the old lady.
Sure.
I think he sent her $150 a month or something like that. So, again, the sons paid the taxes on the house, and I think Jackie would have groceries sent there, but they lived from hand to mouth. They were very – I really say that I have no respect for people that are cowards, and I think people like Pat Loud and Edie Beale and Ron Galella are not cowards. They're strong people, and they survivors, and they're the people among the people I admire the most.
So why do you think that Big Edie didn't want to leave the house and wanted to die there?
Well, if you look at most people, my mother, there's a line in the HBO movie that says, "The only way I'm leaving Grey Gardens is feet first." Well, my mother felt the same way. People that live in their houses for years, they don't want to go to another place. My mother was moved from her apartment, from her house where she lived for 20 years, to an apartment. And then she moved in with my sister and brother-in-law. And a year after she moved in with them, she died. And I really believe that part of it was the stress of changing your environment that late in life. It's very, very traumatic to move any time during your life. And, you know, Big Edie was there for years, and she wanted to die there. And there's a scene in the movie where Jacqueline Onassis, to me it's the climax of the film, sits down with Big Edie and says, "What do you want to do?" And she said, "I'm not leaving Grey Gardens." She said, "Why do you want to stay here?" She said, "Because I love it here." And so Jackie cleaned up the house, and they did. They stayed there until Big Edie died. Little Edie always wanted to go back to New York, and she did. She talks about it in the documentary and says, "Any little rat's nest, any little rat hole." But she felt that she was compelled to stay there and take care of her mother. And that, listen, I talk about a lot of my friends are in Grey Gardens syndrome. I must have at least five friends who have forsaken their lives to go home and take care of their parents. And it's really going on, because what's the option? You put your parent in a nursing home, and most people can't afford that.
Well, and they clearly weren't in a position to afford something like that either. And what do you think I guess I'm still just kind of perplexed about what Big Edie's fascination with the charm is. You know, I get not wanting to be moved and have your environment change and things like that. But, you know, before Jackie came in and cleaned up the place, you know, being in such squalor.
Well, they had servants. They were people that I can say probably honestly, and again, I could not watch that show, Hoarders, when it was on. I know a lot of people liked it, but they had servants, and they had to let their servants go, and I don't think they knew how to clean the house, believe it or not. Edie, you know, there's a scene in the movie where Jacqueline Kennedy walks in, Jean Triplehorn plays Jacqueline Kennedy, and she chokes on everything, and Big Edie says, "My daughter isn't much of a housekeeper," which I think is hilarious, you know what I mean?
I am fascinated by that. There are many things that I liked about your book. The fact that you have letters that were scanned in by Edie that are written, you know, obviously to you and, you know, personal in nature. She had just beautiful handwriting.
She did. And, you know, I saved the letters. I didn't know why I saved them. I did an interview with a woman in Alabama about a year ago, and she asked me why I saved the letters. And I said, you know, she was Jacqueline Kennedy's first cousin. Lee Radziwill and Jacqueline Kennedy, who are sisters, looked up to her. Edie was 15 years older than those women. And when they would come to the house, Big Edie would sing songs, and they had very, very fond memories of Aunt Edie and their cousin Edie. There was, you know, but they were eccentric women. You know, they were not stupid. They were highly intelligent. And the old lady sings Tiefer too in the documentary. She had a spectacular voice. She made records. They wanted to be entertainers, and so Michael Corey and Scott Frankel thought it was great background to do a musical about. And that musical is continually done in regional theaters nationwide, and I have heard through the grapevine that it's coming back to Broadway in the next year or two, as they always bring Broadway musicals back.
So why do you think the charm for the Broadway musical, especially for Grey Gardens, is such a lasting
because
know, fixture
it tells
in American
a story
history?
About a woman that comes home to take care of her mother because the mother has no other choice. She's an 80-year-old woman that's bedridden, and Edie came home in the 50s, and she just never left because her mother needed her, and that she felt that's what she needed to do as a good daughter. I have a friend of mine, a guy who is a straight guy, and he was living with a woman. His father died, and his mother didn't have a car. He's been living with his mother for the last 15 years. And she's and he doesn't have a life, and it's very, very common today. I think a lot of people relate to that. There's also the whole thing with the cats. There's a lot of people that love cats, and there's about 50 cats in the documentary, and you know, that are referenced in the HBO film.
Well, I totally get the cat thing because I'm a dog person. I've got five. If I could have 50 dogs or 100 dogs that got along as well as my five do, I'd be totally on board with that. So I get that.
Well, how about having a raccoon in the house? Because they also had a raccoon. There's a scene where Edie takes a couple packets of Wonder Bread and puts out to feed the raccoons that are living in the house.
I would do it.
So
totally
it was like she says in the interview with me that Greg Gardens became an animal sanctuary. I mean, really, seriously, part of the reason I took these guys, number one, I needed a photographer, and I also took another friend of mine who was a music writer for the paper, you know, and they added to the interview. I'm going to send it to you. And in fact, I would like to do a giveaway, if you do that, of one CD and one and a copy of Memorabilia, if you want to do that.
Let's do it. I'll tell you what. We're going to make this a social media contest, or not really a contest, but a social media giveaway. If you comment either on my post on Facebook or Walter's post on Facebook about your favorite Grey Gardens memory or moment, Walter and I are going to pick one lucky winner to get a CD and a book, and we'll contact you back and get your mailing address and send that out. So make sure to go to Facebook and leave a little comment. You could even talk about the interview tonight, which would be cool too, and we would love to do that. So, Walter, thank you for doing that. Another question for you here is, in the book, there are some great watercolors throughout the entire book.
That guy did 100 watercolors. His name is Lucas Natale. I wrote to him and I said, I would love to use your watercolors. He doesn't consider himself an artist. And those
watercolors are
amazing. They are beautiful. And they are based on scenes from the documentary. When you watch the documentary, you will see those watercolors in different scenes in the documentary.
So how has this book changed your life?
Grey Gardens has changed my life. It has really changed my life. I did this book back in 2007. It still sells. I am going to try and find an agent. I was a book publicist, among other things. I was also a theater publicist and a museum art publicist. And I had an agent, and he took me into a major publishing house that did books about Jacqueline Kennedy. And I sat down with the executive editor, and I was like, wow, this is great. I'm going to get a contract. I'm going to get an advance. And the guy said, you know, just like you, I always wanted to see Grey Gardens, but I never did. And I thought, screw this. And so then I decided to try and pitch it on my own. And I went outside of the agent, and then I got another agent. Most people cannot get one agent. When the show moved to Broadway, I had an agent who handled a lot of pop culture books and did books on Cher and Frank Sinatra and people like that. And he named his daughter Edie, in fact. He could not sell it. And I thought, you know what? If I got two agents and most people can't get one, I think I can do this. So I contacted a friend of mine named Walt Radomski, who I went to Rutgers with, who was a photographer, and he was a tech person. And I contacted Author House, who is a self-publishing book house. And I said to them, how much would it cost me if you gave me the, you know, tech requirements for a four-color book? And it was very cheap, and so we designed the book together. And it's a beautifully designed book, if I say so myself, and several people have told me that. And we put the book in a mechanical, or whatever you want to call it, and the book is print on demand. And it continually sells. It's kind of like once people see Grey Gardens, they want a book, and they have a choice of several books. Albert Maisel's Daughters did a scrapbook. Eva Beale did her book. There's two books that I did. So there's about five or six books on Grey Gardens that are available on Amazon. I don't make any money. Amazon sells the book for $35, and Author House sells it for $25. I get $5 and $10 on each book sale that I then have to pay tax on. So if anybody thinks I'm making money, I ain't. So what I'm going to start doing is I now do programs where they show either the documentary or the HBO movie, and then I do a Q&A and I sell books. I buy the books myself, and I make a little bit of money. And I'm also going to start lecturing at college film classes about it because it's recognized as one of the best documentaries ever made. And the Maisels brothers are also known for Gimme Shelter, the big movie about the Rolling Stones, the murder at on.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
which, ironically, Lance Loud went to that. So the whole thing is kind of interesting how Pat Loud. There's a book called Ethereal Queer about the history of gays on TV. And I'm very proud that they have a page in the book about the correlation between Grey Gardens and An American Family, because Edie Biel adored Pat Loud. She just loved her. She knew that she was a good friend of mine. In fact, she had never seen the TV series. And 10 years after An American Family aired, HBO did a documentary called An American Family Revisited, the Louds 10 years later. And Edie saw that, and she wrote me a letter that we're possibly going to auction. It's either going to go into the Yale archive, about comparing An American Family to Grey Gardens.
I think this
and because Pat Loud and Edie Biel became notorious celebrities. People did not talk about divorce. They did not in the 70s. And Pat Loud told her husband, asked her husband to leave the house. And then there was Lance. She had five children, and he was living at the Chelsea Hotel and there, Jackie Curtis and Holly Woodlum. But the word gay is never mentioned, never mentioned. So, again, he is recognized as the first openly gay person on TV in the history of TV. And I found out recently in the last couple of years that there are now gay studies classes at colleges. And so I'm hopefully going to embark, I'm pitching myself now, to places like Duke University and Brown and Harvard that have gay studies classes, because Lance Loud is not only educational, he's historical. And a lot of the young people today take being gay for granted, when the only other gay show that was on TV after Lance Loud appeared on TV in the 70s was Will and Grace. But before that, there was no. I said to people, well, Liberace was on TV, but he was straight. Ha ha.
Ha ha ha. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he sued that magazine, confidential for saying he was gay. And then it was all these years later that he was on HBO with Michael Douglas playing him and Matt Damon. What a great story that was, right?
I think Hollywood history is always interesting. But, Walter, as we're wrapping up our time together, where would you like people to stalk you on social media and buy your books?
Well, I got to put together a fan page, because I have to say that the majority of my Facebook friends are Grey Gardens fans. I now have 4,999 Facebook friends. I have to launch probably a fan page or something. I think that's what you do. If anybody wants to buy a signed book from me, they can contact me on Facebook, or my email is newkirkpr@aol.com. I sell all of my books myself. I sign them, and I sell them cheaper than they are on Amazon. Unfortunately, I have not sold 5,000 copies to all my Facebook friends. I sell the majority of my books on Amazon, because the world is not on Facebook. And there are, I heard this recently, 285 million people that shop on Amazon. So when people see Grey Gardens and they want to read more, they go there, and that's where they buy my two books, Memorabilia and Letters Little Edie Biel, and also the CD Little Edie Live.
So do that, folks, and we're going to have Walter back in the new year to talk about his book, The Secret Life of Walter Newkirk, and quite frankly, anything else Walter wants to talk about. So thank you, my friend, for being here tonight. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here, and I wish you continued success.
It was great talking to you. Thank you so much, Gary, and you have a great evening.
Thanks, Walter. Everybody, we're going to be right back with filmmaker Jill Salvino in just a quick moment, but here's a quick break with It Matters Radio.
Once again, we're here to discuss It Matters Radio, live talk radio at its best.
Yes, indeed. I must say my involvement was quite pleasurable.
And this is Dr. Thurston Thursday, who was a guest just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, what did you talk about on your visit to It Matters Radio?
Not quite sure. You see, I'm a medium, and I used to be a large, but I lost some weight.
I see.
In my position, I communicate with spirits from the other side.
The other side of what?
Again, not sure, but I hear a voice coming through.
Excuse me. I have a few more things to say about the Watergate. Beautiful hotel, lousy service. Keep in mind, I'm not a crook.
Is this Richard Nixon?
I'm afraid I can't reveal that. However, I can reveal that the 18 minutes have been found.
Yes, quiet. I like that.
Wow, that was weird.
You think that's weird? Wait until Truman Capote tries to come through.
It Matters Radio prides itself on bringing new talent to the forefront. Music, opinion, and spoken word, with emphasis on finding the hottest indie artists from around the world, unheralded books, and important causes. We like to think of ourselves as discoverers.
Yes, I know. I like to think of myself as almost anyone that comes through. Oh, no. right here on our really big show.
It Matters Radio with host Monica Brinkman, co-host Kenneth Ween, and co-host Carrie Hall on Thursday evenings, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
They're not on our really big show, but tonight, Little Tupper G-Joe, the aerial photos of Kate Smith, and right here on our stage, the entire United States Naval Submarine Fleet, right here on our really big show.
It Matters Radio, Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
And the Beatles. Yes, excellent. Why?
Because it matters.
Yes, of course.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
We are going to be joined next by filmmaker Jill Salvino, and she's a highly decorated creative director who's collected over 200 industry awards, including an Emmy. We have yet another Emmy winner on the show. She has a full-length screenplay in development and has directed several short films. Taking It for Granted was shown in over a dozen film festivals across the United States, and her other shorts are The Sonnet Project, currently touring in England, and Lies People Tell, which premiered at the Perdro Film Festival. I can't say that five times fast. Between the Shades is the film she's going to be talking to us about tonight. It's her first documentary. She is a member of PROMEX, a longstanding chair of the Telly Silver Council, and a member of the New York Women in Film and Television. Cinewoman has created a feature on director Jill Salvino for the current issue and their net review. Say that, all of that, and that gives us our next guest on the show tonight. Jill, how are you? Thank you for being here.
Hi, Jared. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We also need to thank Doug and Bert over at Equality Vodka for connecting the dots and getting us together yesterday and getting you on the show tonight. So thanks, Bert and Doug and Equality Vodka. We think you're awesome. So, Jill, we've got a fun film that you're going to be telling us about tonight. What is Between the Shades?
It is a document, and thank you for your energy. You know, just keep in mind that I'm on the East Coast, so I'm
bless you for
probably
doing
not going to be as. But you know, as I get older, we get a little tired at night. But you have great, great radio voice. So it's Between the Shades started out as a conversation about how many different shades of gay there are, and it came out innocently and flippantly in a conversation I was having with some friends of mine, and I was describing another friend of mine, and I said, oh, he's not like Michael gay, he's more like Pete kind of gay. And I realized that I had just applied this huge stereotype, but that we both knew exactly what I was talking about. And it just seemed like a ripe topic of conversation.
That, I think, is interesting because, you know, that is something that I even say with my friends, because, you know, we all use descriptors to talk about, you know, oh, he's like this or she's like that. But I've never really thought about it in terms of LGBT. So is this a topic or a subject that you have kind of dealt with in the past with other projects that you've worked on?
A little bit. You know, I was hired to be a director for a film, Taking It for Granted, and it involved a gay couple that was married and they were getting divorced, and they had a baby on the way, and there were two gentlemen that had sort of maybe impulsively jumped into the relationship and been married and hadn't really thought through the consequences, you know, of what would happen. And I think, and one of the attorneys that's going to be in the film and be interviewed was telling me about a lot of his cases where he used to cover a lot of straight marriages that were getting divorced, and now a lot of the people that come to him are gay couples that fought for so long to marry, for the right to marry, but didn't necessarily think through the after product or what happens if they have children and what state it's, you know, in the state of New York, how it's recognized and you know what happens thereafter. So you know, I think people fought so hard for that, right? And I don't want to go down this particular road. I mean, there are so many roads to the story, and that's sort of the point, is that it started off sort of as a sort of 50 Shades of Gay in my mind, because I'm thinking, how many shades are there and how do people identify? And then I realized that, you know, there aren't 50. There are probably 250 million at this point, because everybody's so individual.
So why do a Kickstarter campaign to make this film a reality?
You know, that's a good question too, because I've done commercial work for so long, and I have other projects that are with studios, and this just sort of fascinated me, and I did a quick little short that got a lot of festival attention, that were about two friends meeting and catching up in the park, and, you know, how one of them was sort of lying about their life and, you know, what they were doing with it, and that we all just sort of take things for granted, and, you know, we look at people and go, you know, what is their truth, and what are they telling me, and, you know, how do they identify themselves, you know, and how do we identify them, and do we really need to have that conversation anymore?
Well, and then when you're getting ready to do an indie project, which is a lot different than doing commercial, where, you know, you've got big budgets, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, here,
exactly.
Jill, let me just give you a blank checkbook and
it's
done. You know,
I didn't want somebody, and there are a lot, there's a celebrity component, and people are sending in clips to answers of questions. And really my intention is to sort of put together more of a fun movie, if you will, not like a typical
sure.
documentary, but ask 50 people the same question and say, you know, what are you looking for? And, you know, what was your best first date? And I'm going to have 50 different people answer that question for you. And you may not even think that any of them are gay, because they're so on the spectrum, you know, and the result, I think what you're going to hear from all these answers is that, you know, what are you looking for in somebody to grow old with, or what are you looking for in an ideal companion? And I think the answer to that question is going to be that the commonality is that everybody's looking for love.
Isn't that the truth? And, you know, one of the things that I thought was kind of fun with your Kickstarter campaign, and by the way, there is a link at the bottom of our show page tonight. It says, you know, check out her Kickstarter campaign here. We make it really easy. You just have to click that, and it's going to magically pop up in a new window, and it's going to tell you that as of, well, almost, 8 o'clock tonight, almost 11 o'clock Eastern time, Jill's raised $34,059, and she's got 6 days to go to reach 46. So she's at the, like, 11,941 mark, and would really love some extra love from the listeners here tonight. Tell us some of the perks that people get if they are going to choose to participate in your program.
Gosh, that ranges from a silent thank you if somebody doesn't want to be acknowledged. T-shirts. I think one of my favorite things that people are jumping on are your voice in the film under the credits, so people can leave a 10-word love note to somebody that goes in the film at the end. What else? People have donated things, paintings and photographs and, you know, jewelry that are all, you know, gay inspired, or, you know, inspired by the movie, or, you know, that go with the film. There's a ton of things. And Kickstarter, if you go to Kickstarter and you just put in the search bar Between the Shades, I think you can look under documentaries, but it's kind of harder to get there.
Well, do look for Between the Shades. And again, there's a link on the show page, so if you're listening live or
great.
On Memorex, it'll be there when we do the YouTube
cool.
rebroadcast. I'll have the link in the, you know, it'll be right there smack dab in front of your eyes. You'll be able to see that very easily. But you can pledge anywhere from $5 all the way up to, with, you know, you might
that's
like fast. A $10,000 donation, and, you know, get
yeah,
that tonight.
Yeah, there's corporate sponsors.
So we love
corporate
sponsors.
There's an opportunity for corporate sponsors as well. I mean, you know, I think the beauty of this film is that there are pledges for $1 and $5 from people that I have never met that have just stumbled across the fan page on Facebook. And there are people that have given huge amounts of money that I've never met. And then dear friends that are stepping up. But I think what has really touched me about this film more than any project I've ever worked on are the stories that are coming to me, because I really started stepping away saying, okay, you know, if I start to interview, 25 people or 50 people, that are gay or some spectrum of gay, whether they've never been able to express that emotion or they're in a relationship for, you know, a long period of time, there's such a range. But then look at the impact that has on maybe, like, my friends were at dinner, and they were over for dinner, and they were telling me about their son who recently came out in college and, you know, what their fears are for him. And then I'm thinking, well, if I look at what their fears are and what they're proud of and what they embrace, what about parents of kids that came out 30 years ago? How does that differ? Vastly, I would think. You know, and so that's sort of what I want to, you know, like the movie's just spiraled into, you know, such a lovely story, and so many people have come to me telling me their stories that it's just, you know, it's touching. It really is, and you know, I'm thankful for that.
Well, I think everybody should, you know, get out their wallets. You know, I'm a big fan. I'm supporting the cause. So I want everybody to go out and buy Walter's book, Memorabilia. I want everybody to go and help Jill tonight with her indie movie, Between the Shades. And it's people like these amazing creatives that come onto the program that share their visions that help make the world go round. So if you can, please, whether it's $5 or $10,000, $10,000 would be really cool. Go help
awesome.
Support the cause and be a backer for this project. Take a look at all the perks and do that. And then when the film's ready to go, Jill, I can't wait to have you back, and we'll talk about what the experience was like actually getting to talk to these 50 people and all the different crazy answers that they give you for your questions.
Thank you so much. And it's so last minute, and I really appreciate the extra
coverage,
and the extra discussion on this, and to Doug and Equality, because they're just really, really great folks, and they're doing great work.
Doug and Bird, Equality Vodka, we love you! Okay,
yeah,
so there we go.
Sure, no, I mean it.
Yeah, I do too. They're awesome folks. I got a chance to meet
them.
And thank
you, Garrett.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. So, Jill, you can come back anytime. We just need to schedule you in advance so we can spend more time gushing about all the stuff that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, your dog, Garrett.
Hey, have a great night. Take care.
You too. Good night.
Okay, bye-bye. So, everybody, again, what a fun show. We've had Walter Newkirk on talking about Memorabilia. Again, go email him or find him on Facebook and buy a copy direct. You know, one of the things that, you know, for indie people, you know, he makes a great point. You know, Amazon pays him $5 and they sell it for $35. Is, you know, the publisher sells it for $25, he gets $5. They're not making all the money off the book. You would think that that would be a great thing. Same for the music artists that we have on the show. You know, they have their album on iTunes for $10, and out of that they might get $6, and then if their label takes a cut or whatever, you know, so by the time it's all said and done, that sounds like, oh yeah, they sold, you know, 10,000 copies of their album at $10 a piece. They should be rich. But, you know, the fact is that if they've, you know, paid a producer and everything else, and they're getting $3 a record, you know, and you've got, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 people in the band, they're not making boatloads of money, folks. So I'll encourage you, whenever you can, find out how your artist prefers to be supported and then support them in that way. And in this case, you know, Walter would like you to go and buy his book directly from him. Jill would love your support for her documentary called Between the Shades. It's going to be a look at the full spectrum of what's going on in the world of LGBT and how that changes not only for people across the spectrum, but also their friends and families. And I am very interested to see how this is going to play out. And I hope that you will back her project. Again, she's looking to raise $46,000. That sounds like a lot, but she's already $34,000 deep into it. So it's very, very close to the goal that she is looking for. So again, it's just $11,941. So it would be wonderful if you can help support that. Tomorrow night, again, I want to remind everybody that we've got Leon Acord with his web series, Old Dog, New Tricks. Want to thank, I'm going to say Bruce Hart must have connected us because Bruce Hart is starring in Old Dog's New Tricks, but I'm not sure if he did. But Leon's going to be on talking about season number 4 of this web series. It's their last season as well. So I'm going to find out what it's been like on seasons 1 through 3, but then also what's been going on with season 4. Is, you know, any, you know, like heartfelt moments? Did anybody break down and cry? Did, you know, anybody, you know, have any like bitchy moments, things like that? So that will be super, super fun. And then on Friday night, we've got Project Grand Slam live out of New York City. They're going to be talking about their current jazz album, and I cannot wait to hear about all of the things that they are doing. We're going to be talking to them live in hour number 1. And in hour number 2, of course, it is always your requests. And I say get them in now, because they start lining up, and then, you know, the show comes and it's just boom, 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 boom. I'll always be live in the chat room on Blog Talk. I'm always live on Facebook during the show. And it's my pleasure to do this with and for you, and hope that you have a great night wherever you're at, including across the pond if you're listening on Chat and Spin Radio or Westar Radio Network. Love having you be part of the party. Please come back tomorrow. Tell your friends and family to listen and follow the show, and we will see you live on Thursday.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.